The House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Good morning, everybody. We have two items on today's agenda. The first is HB 262, sponsored by Resident Holmes, that deals with procurement exemptions for PDA and OPA, and hopefully she'd go tell us what PDA and OPA means. And the second one is HB 217, by Representative Christ Tompkins, for Dr. Walter Sokoloff Day. So with that, let's begin HB 262. Representative Holmes, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's wonderful to be back.
At my age, it's wonderful to be back every day.
It's wonderful to be anywhere, isn't it?
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing House Bill 262. For the record, my name is Lindsay Holmes. I represent House District 19. Mr. Chairman, first off, to clarify, public defenders and Office of Public Advocacy.
And put the mic closer to you.
Yeah. Closer to you.
Or you close the mic either way.
There you go.
There.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Public defenders and the Office of Public Advocacy. That's who we're talking about today. Mr. Chairman, this is going to clarify how the procurement code, it's not going to take them out of the procurement code, it's going to clarify how it applies to these two agencies. The Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defenders are the state agencies that represent indigent clients who are in criminal cases. They are the defense attorneys for indigent clients, paid for by the state, work for the state, they work for the Department of Administration. In these cases, in most of these cases, the other side is the State Department of Law, the prosecutors. Prosecutors are bringing the case, and the public defenders or the Office of Public Advocacy are defending the case, so they're adverse parties. Well, what happens is it was brought to our attention through an audit that the public defenders and the Office of Public Advocacy were not necessarily, or there was some confusion as to what and when they were subject to the procurement code and when they weren't. So what this bill does is it clears up in the first section that in no event do the public defenders or the Office of Public Advocacy have to go to the Attorney General, who is the boss of the prosecutors, to get permission to hire expert witnesses or counsel. That could be a real problem if you have to go to the other side's boss and say, hey, can I have somebody on my team? So that clarifies that, and it also puts the public defenders and the Office of Public Advocacy on the exact same playing field as the Department of Law, who is on the other side, when it comes to hiring outside counsel or expert witnesses. So, Mr. Chairman, that is what the bill does, and I would be happy to take any questions. We also, I believe, have the heads of both the public defenders and the Office of Public Advocacy online, and we have Deputy Director Mike Barnhill.
Yes, I have a Rick Allen, Quinlan Steiner, and
Mike Barnhill, Deputy
here.
Director of Administration.
Would you have a recommendation on which one to call first?
Let's take the one in the room. Let's take Mr. Barnhill.
Okay, Mr. Barnhill, please come forward. And by the way, we have present this morning Reverend Shelley Hughes, Doug Isaacson, Vinnie Gaddis, and Vice Chair Keller, and the others are not here yet.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration. I want to thank the committee for taking this bill up, HB 262, this morning, and also particular thanks to the sponsor for introducing this important piece of legislation. The procurement code, and just by way of background, I've been Deputy Commissioner for 3 years. Prior to that, I was at the Department of Law as an Assistant Attorney General for 12 years. While I was at the Department of Law, I utilized the procurement code quite frequently to retain the services of outside counsel. And what I can tell you is, in the field of law, one attorney does not equal another attorney. It's important to have
one representative does not equal another representative.
One client does not equal. The field of law is highly, highly specialized. You can't go get a criminal defense attorney to represent you in a tax case or a trial practitioner to represent you in an appeal. And so it's important that the procurement code be tailored to apply in highly specialized situations. And so Section 2 of the bill is the limited competition provision, and this gives, when you go and get a limited competition, normally for all state agencies, you have to go get permission from the chief procurement officer, which resides in our department in the Division of General Services. For legal services, you go to the Attorney General to get permission to use the limited competition statute, which is very effective for retaining specialized counsel. But the bill would require the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender's Office to go to the Attorney General to get that permission to do a limited competition procurement. I used the limited competition procurement multiple times when I was at law. It was very effective. We got great counsel to represent the state. The most significant one was the counsel that we retained in the lawsuit against Mercer for actuarial negligence. And I can tell you with a high degree of certainty that the outcome of that case was entirely dependent on the counsel we selected. The ability to get the right counsel to fit the case you have is entirely consistent with our rules of professional responsibility. If we just had a generic procurement code that required us to go to the lowest bidder without consideration of specialization, we would routinely be hiring the wrong counsel for the wrong case. What this bill does is put the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender's Office in the exact same position as the Department of Law with respect to retention of counsel, professional services under the limited competition statute, with respect to the retention of expert witnesses, and under the existing procurement code, the Department of Law is exempt when it comes to hiring expert witnesses. And again, if the field of law is specialized, the field of professional witnesses is extremely specialized. One expert is not the same as another expert, and you can have blood splatter experts. You can have tire tread experts in the field of criminal law. And so that, I believe, is why the Department of Law has had that exemption. But for whatever reason, and I'd like to suggest it was probably an oversight when the procurement code AS3630 was enacted, the criminal defense side of the equation was overlooked and it wasn't included. So this bill restores that and exempts Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender's Office to that exemption so that they can go get whatever expert they need without having to go through the procurement code. That's basically it. I'm happy to answer any questions. And, of course, we have the Director of the Public Defenders, Quinlan Steiner, and the Director of the Office of Public Advocacy, Rick Allen, online for questions as well. Zero fiscal notes.
Would you clarify, sir, the expert witness? I know if any one of us here fell into the system, as a defendant, we'd want to have appropriate witnesses in our favor. And we might want to have an expert witness to help us with our side. So one more time around, if we need an expert witness to testify on XYZ, would we be able to get one at public expense?
Mr. Chair, if you were represented by the Public Defender's Office, you would have to be indigent in order to get representation from either of those offices at public expense. So, yes, you could get an expert witness if you were indigent and there was a question that required expertise in order to assist the trier of fact in determining the evidence.
Okay, thank you. Good heavens, how many notes have you passed in here? One moment, please, while I sort through the notes here. Okay. While I'm doing that, Vice Chair Keller.
Yeah, if you would, just put on the record what indigent means. I mean,
indigent, through the chair, Representative Keller, indigent is a fancy word for poor. You are unable to afford the assistance of counsel.
How's it determined, I guess, is what I want.
I'm going to punt to one of our experts online as to where exactly the line between poor and not poor is drawn in this particular context.
Is that determined by the courts? That's what I was asking.
Yes, I believe it's fundamentally determined by the courts. There are standards, I believe, set out either in court rule or law as to what indigent is.
Mr. Chair, could I ask another question?
Yes, please.
It's unbelievable. I've been looking at the audit, and I would appreciate it if you'd respond to some of the things in the audit, because it's not real clear how changing the authority for the contracting addresses some of the concerns of the audit, some of the things that well, just in general terms, it was contract oversight, you know, that was pointed out in a lot of different ways. And I think that needs to be on the record, your response, and how that correlates with the zero fiscal note. Because, you know, was there a presumption that somebody else was monitoring the contracts, or is there now more effort that you have to take? And just if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Through the chair, Representative Keller. So the legislative audit actually covered a broader scope of topics than what is addressed by this bill. And essentially what the legislative audit found was that the Office of Public Advocacy was not complying with the procurement code as interpreted by the Division of Legislative Audit. Additionally, and this is the part that's not covered by this bill, that they found that there was failure in contract oversight. So on that latter piece, we did file a response with the Division of Legislative Audit. To the extent that it's not in the bill packet, we can certainly obtain that and provide it to the committee. Their recommendation was that the Department of Administration, so by way of background, our department is a very, very broad department in terms of our responsibilities under law. We have the Division of Motor Vehicles, we have the Office of Public Advocacy, Public Defender's Office, we have all the core administrative responsibilities, Enterprise Technology Services, Division of Finance, Division of Personnel Labor Relationship. And within this, we have the Division of Administrative Services, which provides administrative services, including contract oversight, to a number of our divisions. But in this particular context, our Division of Administrative Services was not providing contract management oversight. And the recommendation of the Division of Legislative Audit was that we did. And so we have now begun to provide more oversight. But understand, with 11 divisions and a handful of independent boards, it's quite a large task to provide administrative contract oversight for every single division. So we have begun to provide some of that, and we can continue to monitor and see how that's going on an ongoing basis. We do believe that it is important to effectively monitor and manage contracts across the department. Absolutely. We totally agree with that. But the degree to which that is managed and overseen by our Division of Administrative Services, we're going to have to see if what we're doing now is effective. With respect to the procurement, I believe that what was happening is our Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender's Office interpreted the procurement code and the extent to which the procurement code applied to their procurement practices. They interpreted it differently than the Division of Legislative Audit. They took the position in the first instance that the Attorney General simply could not control how they procured legal counsel or how they would procure expert witnesses. I mean, as a matter of professional responsibility, as the sponsor indicated, if you're adverse to a party, you would never dream of going to the adverse side to ask for permission to retain counsel. And then with respect to the procurement of expert witnesses, the notion that a process could tell you how to retain an expert who may not be the best expert, and the retention of that not the best expert for the case could have implications with respect to your duty of zealous advocacy. I think it just simply didn't occur to them that the procurement code would apply in this way. So what we're doing is we're changing the law so that we have a common understanding of how the procurement code applies with respect to outside counsel, with respect to conflict counsel, with respect to expert witnesses.
Follow up, please. Oh, and before you do, I'd like to recognize our colleague, Representative Christ Tompkins, has joined us.
Yeah. You know, thank you for the response. I just want to say that it makes complete sense. I mean, that the fact that Department of Administration handles the defense, you know, and the prosecutors are in the Department of Law, and, you know, we have to do everything we can to avoid the conflict of interest. But on the other side, just a comment. You know, for us as legislators, you know, the accountability, we realize that we end up paying for the defense and the prosecution and, you know, and the judge in the courtroom and everything, and we're paying all sides of the fight, and just everything we can do to make sure that the contracts are managed in a way that, you know, that is proper, that there isn't changes without proper process, and that's very important to us. So, yeah, thank you for your response. It was good.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Keller, maybe not exactly on point, but Rick Allen, the Director of Office of Public Advocacy, is online, and he has instituted an initiative to help control costs better within the Office of Public Advocacy, particularly when it comes to retention of outside counsel. He has regulations drafted that provide case caps by type of case, so the office will pay X amount for a felony, X amount for a DUI. There are legitimate escape clauses if for some reason the case gets complex and the attorney representing the indigent defendant needs more money in order to effectively represent it. But I think it's an excellent approach to say, okay, here's the standard, here is what we're going to pay. We really do believe very strongly in controlling costs.
Anything else? Anybody else in the committee? I'd like to thank you very much. Please hang around. Do we have?
Thank you.
Let's go to Rick Allen online. Do you have any comments, sir? We have you down for questions, but do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Mr. Chairman, this is Rick Allen from the Office of Public Advocacy. I really don't have anything to add unless there are questions. I think Representative Holmes and Mr. Barnhill really touched on the big issues here, and again, I would just like to thank the committee for taking this bill up.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Hughes.
Hi. I just want to say hi to my constituent, Rick Allen. I hope that's okay, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the work that you do. And actually, Representative Keller's question about the cost control and what was just described, is that, do you have anything to add to that particular point?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, well, thank you so much. And I will say, you know, as Mr. Barnhill mentioned, the implementation of these regulations has really been a game changer for us. When I got here, what I found was that, you know, there were really no controls in place on how much contractors were being paid on given cases, and that posed a series of problems. But one of the major problems is, if you're, you know, the director of an agency like this, you need to try to have as much budgetary predictability as possible. That's, you know, that's a difficult thing to do. But when you don't have any sort of parameters that you're putting on your contractors, that makes budgetary predictability almost impossible. And so we've implemented these caps. This has been, you know, we've been doing this for about a year now. And this has been a big transition for the people that have done contract work for OPA for a long time. But I believe now, you know, people are kind of settled in and realizing that this is the way we're going to do business now. And it's really, really made a big difference for OPA in the bottom line.
Can you follow up, please?
Follow up. And you feel like, as far as the quality of the expert witnesses and the legal counsel, is adequate with your caps?
Through the chair, yes, ma'am, I do. As Mr. Barnhill indicated, there is always a release valve on these with these caps, and the way that works is, if a contractor gets to the point where they've reached their cap, and they believe that their case is highly exceptional for some reason, you know, it may be that their client suffers from major mental health issues, and so there are lots of extra steps that need to be taken to work that case. They write a memo to me, and I personally review each one of those memos and grant relief from the cap or not on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If the defendant, for whatever reason, good or bad, is not happy with the defender, but also with an expert witness, what choice does he or she have?
Mr. Chairman, that's a bit of a complex question. I guess the short answer is, you know, when you're not paying for the services, when the state is providing you the services, you don't get to pick who your lawyer is, who the expert is, any of that sort of stuff. We certainly will take their input and consider the input of our clients. There's no doubt about that. But you know, ultimately, you know, in a criminal case, there are a series of, there's really only a few issues where the defendant, the client, makes the decision. Most decisions in how the criminal case proceeds are done by the attorney. And, you know, we assign the attorneys that we believe are best suited for particular types of cases.
Thank you very much. So a poor person you're not going to get the dream team, I guess.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would say, you know, I have practiced in other parts of the country before coming back home to Alaska, and I am very, very comfortable with the standard that we're able to provide. I'm very, very proud of the work that OPA employees, staff, and contractors do. I think Mr. Steiner would tell you the same thing. Some of the finest, and I say this without reservation, some of the finest criminal defense attorneys and appellate writers work for the Public Defender Agency or the Office of Public Advocacy, and the Department of Law for that matter, but in terms of writers. But we have just excellent, excellent people. And so if you're an indigent person who's been assigned to representation by the Public Defender Agency or the Office of Public Advocacy, you're going to get a quality attorney, and you're going to get the resources that you need to properly defend your case.
That's very, very good to hear. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Quinlan Steiner, are you available?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself and make whatever comment you would like.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. I don't have any specific testimony to provide. I think Deputy Commissioner Barnhill has articulated the concerns addressed by this bill very well. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? I don't see any. I'd like to thank you very much, sir. Okay. Is anybody else online who would like to testify in this bill? Anybody in the audience who would like to testify in this bill? I don't see anybody, so with that, we're going to close public testimony and bring it to the committee for committee discussion. Any questions, comments from anybody? Representative Gaddis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This seems like a relatively, I'm always reluctant to say that, simple bill, but it looks like it's something that just cleans up what we already do. And I certainly, having an expert in their field to even represent those that can't afford seems to make sense, and it directs this. So, you know, I'll be voting in favor of it. It just seems like a pretty straightforward bill.
Thank you very much for your comments. Vice Chair Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that this is the sole committee of referral. The next stop is the floor, and I think that's totally appropriate. I think Representative Gaddis just stated my perspective also, that this is a state affairs issue because it has to do with contract management and administration, and I'm sure you've all read the audit report that was supplied. But I just wanted to put on the record that we realize in the state affairs that this is a one-stop for this bill.
That's why we do such careful examination here on all kinds of bills, especially we have only one. What's the will of the committee? Vice Chair, would you want to make a motion?
Sure. I move HB 262 out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal notes, and that's version 28 LS 1222 alpha.
Okay. Version. With no objection, we will move the bill. Thank you very much for bringing the bill in. We'll take a short at ease while we do the paperwork. Anybody? Please come to order. Next on our agenda today is House Bill 217, and it relates to Dr. Walter Sobolov Day. Please identify yourself.
My name is Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins. I represent rural Southeast Alaska.
And a little louder, please.
I'm the sponsor of House Bill 217, which creates a Dr. Walter Sobolov Day, and I'm co-sponsoring it with the rest of the Southeast delegation.
Okay, tell us about the bill.
House Bill 217 is a bill that designates November 14th as Dr. Walter Sobolov Day.
Please move your microphone closer.
Sure, with pleasure. And it's similar to a bill we heard last year that created a J. Hammond Day. It's something that the state of Alaska does to honor its great Alaskans, and Dr. Walter Sobolov was certainly one of those. He was a great man, a mentor to many. If you go to YouTube, you can see some of what he said in the past before he passed. And he's a revered figure in Southeast and throughout Alaska and the Native communities. And I think the testimony we'll hear today from family members and other people who knew him will very much speak to that.
Thank you. Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Gaddis.
Yes, I do. In no disrespect to Mr. Sobolov, but my question, it's probably a bigger question, but could Southeast honor this great Alaskan without having it be a bill? And I guess that's really my challenge. And to go back to even the J. Hammond Day, that was a question in my mind. Are there any other options, or must one have a bill in order to do this process?
Well, there was a grassroots movement in Southeast to create this particular means of honoring Dr. Walter Sobolov, and so we, the delegation, wanted to be responsive of that. And, I mean, he truly was a towering figure in the Native community statewide through the Alaska Federation of Natives, through the early Native Civil Rights Movement. But you're right, there are other ways of honoring him, and, in fact, the building that's being erected downtown is the Dr. Walter Sobolov Cultural Center that's being built by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. But this is the manifestation of a grassroots movement from across Southeast and Alaska, this bill in particular.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Hughes.
And as follow-up to Representative Gaddis's question, when we do by statute designate a day, what kind of things will then happen as far as what does the state do? Is it posted on a calendar, or tell me how it helps?
Effectively, and it's similar to what we recently celebrated Elizabeth Paratovich Day, for instance, on November 14th, 16th, excuse me, and it becomes, not an excuse, but sort of a prompt to remember the significance of that figure and the values and ideals that figure might represent. So with Elizabeth Paratovich Day, that's noted in a lot of schools, the history of anti-discrimination legislation in the state or territory of Alaska. But it's really how groups, schools, institutions choose to, honor or observe the person and what the person represented.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Vice Chair Keller.
If I could, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I had the honor and the privilege of meeting Dr. Sobolov, and was incredibly impressed with his peaceful, wise demeanor. Thank you for doing this.
Mr. Vice Chair, how long ago was that? What was the occasion?
it was a, the occasion was a visit here. No, we went to his home. It was over by Lemon Creek. I think it was a humble home there, and it was. I went with Senator Fred Dyson. It was a social visit. It had nothing to do with the with anything that he was doing. But
very good.
Just a great, great encounter, and one that I value as a memory.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much. I have the folks on here. I have some from actually from the Sobolev family. So I think I'm going to let them wrap that up after we hear some of the other folks. Got to be most appropriate, I think, to hear from the family is what we call a wrap-up here. So let's go to William Martin. Are you here, sir? Welcome to the House State Affairs Committee. Good morning. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is William Martin. I am Grand President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. However, today I'm here representing my brother, Robert, who is a trustee on the Sea Alaska Heritage Board and is representing Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. I'm also accompanied by Mrs. Selena Everson, who is a member of the ANS Executive Committee, a past Grand President, and a person who has known Dr. Sobolev all of her life. Mr. Chairman, in some ways it is difficult to explain why Dr. Sobolev was a great man. We just know that he was. He wasn't a lawmaker who passed landmark legislation or a maverick who changed the financial future of the state. Rather, he was an individual who changed the state for the better, one person at a time. He was a person who quietly led by example and whose small acts of kindness made profound and lifelong impressions on the people he touched. He was wise, humble, and kind, and as Alaska's first Native ordained minister, he used those gifts to bring comfort to people across the state and to unite people during difficult times. He was the kind of person we might all aspire to be, an ideal human being. He was dear to the Sea Alaska family. He served as Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's chair almost as long as the Institute has been in existence. His guidance prompted the Institute to make Native language revitalization a priority 20 years ago. As a fluent Tlingit speaker, he worked with language students up until the last days of his long life. He cherished his countless non-Native friends and belonged to many civic organizations. He was the first pastor in Juneau to open the church to all people, Natives and non-Natives alike. At a time when segregation was the norm, his delivery was low-key and his message was simple. Love your neighbor, for love is God. I remember as a young man growing up in Cake, my parents and grandparents would sit by the radio on Sunday mornings and listen to his message that was delivered in Tlingit, and people in all the villages of Southeast Alaska would always make a point to listen to his message. His church, however, proved to be so popular with non-Natives, a political decision was made to shut it down. But as one person said, Dr. Sobolev found other ways to minister to the people. He was a spiritual leader who didn't need a building. We are naming the building in his honor anyway. At his memorial in 2011, we announced that Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's new cultural center would carry his name. We see the Walter Sobolev Center as a physical manifestation of the things he held dear, the perpetuation and teaching of Native languages, history, and culture, in a place where all people, Natives and non-Natives alike, will be welcome. We thank you for introducing this bill. We hope that you will support it and make HB 217, make November 14th Dr. Walter Sobolev Day. And I would ask your kindness to allow my sister, Selena Everson, to say a few words.
Yes, sir. That would be good. One question. You indicated something about, could you tell us why his church, I guess it was shut down? What was the reason for that?
It's because it became so popular that the regular church that the non-Natives went to wasn't doing quite as well as the Presbyterian Memorial Church that he was minister in.
That's interesting. Okay. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Good morning. My name is Selena Everson. I'm a member of the Alaska Native Sisterhood Executive Committee, which means I served as grand president at one time. What can I say about Dr. Soboloff that hasn't been said by a lot of people? But I'll try to say in my own how I felt when I knew this man was from, I always say, the suburb of Angoon. Killisnoo was a thriving herring reduction plant outside of Angoon where Dr. Soboloff was born. I barely remember his mother, a very gracious lady. Dr. Soboloff meant everything to our Native communities. The first time I heard that name, his Tlingit name, Dawi Chun, we tried to giggle, and my mother and father said, no, you don't do that. This is a man of honor and respect. We didn't know. We were maybe 10 years old or 8. You'd think I'd have known better by now. But we grew up knowing Dr. Soboloff. I did. He performed marriages of our people. He gave comfort when there was sorrow. He stood by us. How else can we honor him? The building downtown bears his name. But we also, in our hearts, in all Native Alaskans' hearts, bear his name. And thank you so very much, Kunashish, to the sponsors of this important. It's like somebody uplifted our heads, like he did, by his very birth, his dedication to his church and his people. And for that, you're honoring him, and for that, I will say from the bottom of our hearts, Kunashish. Thank you very much to all of you.
Thank you very much for that. Just one question. How old was Dr. Soboloff when he passed away?
102.
102.
Okay. I can appreciate that. Thank you. That in itself is quite an achievement. I'm having difficulty reading this. Is there a Peter Narona, if I probably mangled your name there, but please, when you put yourself on the record, please pronounce it correctly for me.
Will do, Mr. Chairman.
It's the fault of whoever wrote this on my sheet here, so.
That'll be my fault.
Is it your fault?
Yes, sir.
You did it to yourself.
Okay. I did it to myself.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the State Affairs Committee, my name is Peter Nowrose. And it's a great honor to be here today in my capacity as the President and General Manager of Kootsnoo Incorporated, the village corporation for the community of Angoon. Some of you may remember me. I worked for Representative Grunberg a few years ago, and I worked in this committee room quite a bit. And so that's part of my past. Before that, I worked for the Alaska Permanent Fund, having been brought here by Byron Malott from the Virginia Retirement System. I mentioned that because of the question about the significance and why this should be a statewide day, celebrated day. In Virginia, I was very proud to have graduated from the University of Virginia, which was founded by Thomas Jefferson, a states' rights advocate. And when I came to Alaska, my job was really to invest money. And that's what I did for 8 years. I fell in love with my new home. I live on Thane Road right now, so I'm not very far from this capital. But I fell in love, but I didn't know how much Alaska meant to me until after I met with Dr. Soboloff. And Dr. Soboloff was the president of Kootsnoo prior to me, and he was also our president emeritus. We have approximately 1,000 shareholders, a third of which live in Juneau, and I'm proud that they're here, but you know, I am the representative of the Village Corporation of Angoon, which is slowly fading away, but not gone, let me tell you. Dr. Soboloff was very interested in my leadership And I heard the word mentor earlier and was very, very much a mentor myself. He had one goal for me to accomplish, and I haven't done that yet. And that was to make sure that the energy costs in Angoon were low enough that we could build a bakery and bake the bread for all of Alaska there. That was his goal. And that we needed to provide the economic engine to contribute to the overall state in a meaningful way. And those are humble words, bake bread. For all Alaska is a little bit far-reaching, but the point's well made. And this is a man whose family traces its roots to the very photograph or the painting behind you. From the territorial days, from the acquisition by the United States of the Russian interests to the territorial days to the statehood. In fact, he was born in 1908, shortly after the Tongass was proclaimed a national forest. And I have a piece here that I'd like to enter into the record that was a My Turn piece penned by Dr. Sobolev on April 8th, 2008. And it talks about him being born in Killisnoo. It talks about the policy of President Roosevelt in terms of the Tongass. And I'll spare reading the details of it, but it's really about the economics of building homes and societies. And that's unfortunately not what the Tongass is about today. The Tongass is something very different. And so he could say that quietly and in a way that was effective. But getting back to the point that I was trying to make earlier about his interest in me and in my job at Kootsnuwu, he called me into Donna's or the Valley Restaurant one morning, and I had coffee with him, and he said, "What can I do to help you make Thayer Creek a reality?" And I talked to him. Well, just asking me that question is focusing me, so I appreciate that. And what he did was two things. He wrote up My Turn piece that I mentioned a moment ago, and I'll briefly cover that moment here. But the other thing he did is he introduced me to John Sandor, another great Alaskan. John Sandor was the regional forester of the Tongass. And he was a Gifford Pinchot Award winner in some of his last years. And he's a brother of mine and the Alaska Miners Association, and a person who's very interested in the development of resources in the state. I couldn't have a better teacher in terms of, you know, how do we get our resources to market, something that I work on quite a bit in my day-to-day. So with John's introduction, with his history and connections with the Tongass, you know, and with his gentle way of saying that we're not doing enough and that we need to do more, you know, I would say that he's a model for the entire state and really represents that debate that takes place right now between states' rights and the federal government, the broken promises that we all, you know about, and how do we get from here to there in a positive way. So I recommend, and it's my great honor to testify before you and answer any questions you might have, but I would take this day and mark it on the calendar very boldly so that everyone can remember, you know, where we come from and what we still need to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions or comments from the committee? Thank you. Oh, Representative Hughes.
Thank you for your testimony and for highlighting those different things. I've learned a lot this morning. And I, too, like Rep. Gaddis, just wonder sometimes what we do. But I can see the value, and the sponsor pointed it out. The building here that's named after him, those in Southeast will be aware of that, but the rest of the state might not make it down here and be aware of. And I think you're describing what he stood for is a good thing for school children around the state to learn about. And for that reason, I will support this. So thank you.
Thank you. And the one word I didn't use, Mr. Chairman, was he's a businessman. And that's not, you're not going to hear that. Most people don't think of him as, they think of him civil rights, they think of him as a spiritual leader, they think of him about a gentle person, but he was a bottom line businessman, and he knew what 60 cent a kilowatt of energy would do to a community. So he was a businessman as well.
Very good. Thank you. looks like Selena Everson. Did I have that correct? Ms. Everson, is there?
She testified with.
Oh, her, she did. That was her, that, okay, yeah, I beg your pardon.
I'm sorry. I thought it was
that one. Okay. Susitna. What's this? Susitna. Susitna King, are you here?
Good morning.
Hey, welcome to our committee. Thank you for coming in.
I'm Susetna King. I'm coming here as an individual and a personal knowledge of Dr. Walter Soboloff. I come from the village of Angoon. My parents are John and Teresa Howard. And growing up, we spent a lot of time with Dr. Walter Soboloff and his wife and some of the grandkids that went over to Tenneke. Sorry.
I understand. Well, take her at ease.
But growing up in the village, you don't really know what is happening until you step outside the village. But at times when we went over to Tenneke, he would talk to us in ways that he was preparing us for what we were about to step into once we've gotten older and moved away from the village. But he had always put God first, and it's kind of something that we were raised up knowing. And I always think about the time when we went over to Tenneke, we went on speedboats, and we'd go there for the 4th of July. And that one summer, I went there and I didn't race. And he asked why I didn't race with the kids, and I told him, I said, because I always win. And he looked at me, and he had this funny laugh, and he goes, what if somebody would have beat you today? What would you have done? I said, I probably would have came back next year and beat them. He goes, but you didn't put yourself out there. I entered into the Alaska Native Sisterhood when I came here to Juneau. And I remember my first Amy and Anus convention. Like everything else, you know, we face issues being Alaska Native, and it's nice to see a group of people come together and deal with them and try their best to try to make the change. And I was so busy at the convention, and he was sitting there, and he goes, he told me to come and have a seat. It was during one of our luncheons, and I came there, and I had a seat. And he asked what my thoughts were. I said that I still had a lot to learn. And he goes, it helps when you surround yourself with good people. And then he asked me, because we have to run for offices just like you guys run. And he goes, are there any particular office you're interested in running in? And I looked at him and said, no. And then he goes, I asked you. He goes, I'm going to ask you again. I said, okay. And he goes, is there any particular office that you're going to run for. And I looked at him, and if you don't know that side of Walter where you could be honest, just because I grew up around them, I looked at him and said, can I be honest with you? And he was like, no, lie to me. Like, okay. I looked at him, I said, as tired as I am and as hard as everyone is working, I said, I really want to run for the door. It was a lot of work. And he just looked at me. He goes, one day you'll be ready. And they're getting you ready for it. He goes, you're not here by accident. You're here to serve a purpose. And you're stepping into it. After knowing Walter personally and then seeing him and the work that he has done, there isn't any person far greater than himself to be honored like this. It's something we should all strive for. It's something that every time we go to bed, did we do our best? Did we serve all people? And that's how he lived. He didn't see the color of your skin. He wanted to help, so he put himself there. And he was given such grace to do it, no matter what he faced. And I surround myself with that comfort, knowing that he believed in so many people and he saw the best in everybody. And everyone should know that. His history should be shared through the kind of heart that he held. So everybody could want that. And how we move away from discrimination, we've come a long ways, but it's still so silent. It's now become silent. And now we have to look at ourselves and try to figure out how do we move away from the silent discrimination. And I often wish that I would have asked him that, because he knew it was there. He knew it was still there. But in my heart, I know he left a lot of himself and a lot of all of us. He done so much for so many people that he touched so many lives, and then now it's our job to carry that. And how we carry that would be allowing the whole state of Alaska to know who he was as a man and the heart that he carried for all people. Thank you so much for your time.
Very, very eloquent. Thank you so much for your testimony. You made the comment, I think Dr. Soblo said something about you're not here by accident, and that's true. And I think in a broader sense, I don't think anybody in this room or anybody in the world is here by accident. There's a purpose all being here, the good, the bad, the in-between. We're all here for a purpose. None of us are here by accident. Thank you for your testimony.
All right, thank you.
I believe we have, it looks like a group of folks, and I would invite them all to come up. It says the Soboloff family, and it looks like Sasha, Ross, Janet, and Walter Soboloff. Are you all in the room? So, folks, please come forward. Now, you might have to get some extra chairs and pull them up. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. What we're going to do here, make sure as you testify that you identify yourselves for the clerk here. And I, whoever's going to lead off, start in, and then we'll just kind of go down the line, I guess. And so just hold up. Who's everybody's going like?
They're
going like
pointing this. At each other.
We do that in the legislature sometimes. They ask us a question, and we go like this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ross Sobolev. My Tlingit name is Ichte. My Haida name is Tost.
And bring it forward closer, please.
Roll. I am the son of Dr. Walter Sobolev, and I am joined this morning by my brother Sasha on the end, my sister Janet, and my brother Walter. I'm here today representing myself, and I support House Bill 217, designating November 14 as Dr. Walter Sobolev Day in Alaska. I'd like to offer brief comments to you considering regarding the significance of this proposed day, but I'd like to first thank Chairman Lynn and Vice Chair Keller for holding this hearing today, and thank Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Feige, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Munoz, and Representative Guerra for sponsoring this bill. I also, Mr. Chairman, have given the committee a copy of an obituary on Walter Sobolev, which I hope covers the very broad expanse of his 102 years and gives the committee a sense of what his statewide impact was. I've also given the committee a copy of his native values, which I'll refer to a little bit later. But I'd like to start with a quote from Abraham Lincoln, who said, "If you would win a man to your cause, first convince him that you are his sincere friend." Walter Sobolev was a great admirer of Abraham Lincoln, and Representative Hughes and Representative Gaddis, you asked some very good questions about the significance of his life statewide. Perhaps we might consider what cause it was that he was trying to win people to. Other people today have said that Reverend Sobolev was the minister of Memorial Church in Juneau. He served there until 1962, and though people often remember this as a Native church, today we may not be considering designating a Walter Sobolev Day if his work and his reach ended there. I contend that by the end of his ministry at Memorial Presbyterian Church, it had become what he wanted it to be. And that was a church where everyone from all parts of the community were welcome. He always told me that you have to feed your spirit. I think he fed the spirit of people from many walks of life, in his church and in his service, and sometimes as chaplain at this legislature. In the diverse society of Alaska, he cast a wide net and a long shadow. If we're to celebrate a day in Alaska, I suggest we remember that he was welcoming and inclusive, that he lived his life in many different communities of people in this state, the Native community, the non-Native community, the university and the academic community, the military, business, government. He was there. And on this day, I suggest that we take the day to remember how he lived his life with tolerance, with grace, and with courage, and that we talk about how we as Alaskans today are living and working together. Later in his long life, he put together a list of what has become popularly known as Native values. It was an articulation of the values and standards by which he observed the Alaska Native community had lived for generations. And I have given a copy of his version of these Native values in his own words, as part of my testimony. And he wrote the way that he spoke. So when you look at these values, you might want to say them out loud, because that's the way that he wrote. I emphasize that he did not take credit for creating these values. Rather, he was probably the first to write them down based on wisdom and thinking he readily acknowledged came from the many Native elders that he knew from around the state. And I've heard in these legislative halls and the halls of our state government many stories about ordinary and extraordinary men and women from all parts of our state who have said or done great or small things that left a mark on the person who is telling the story. And you all know these people, my friends. A certain person taught you how to do something. A certain person showed you something that really meant something to you. We have a term for these people, a compliment that we give to in our state that we consider the best of the best. We call them true Alaskans. May I respectfully suggest that you revisit Dr. Walter Sobolev's statement of Native values in a different light now that he is gone. Consider them an articulation of some of the values and standards by which we measure what we call a true Alaskan. Dr. Sobolev believed that good values are good for everyone. Perhaps on Dr. Walter Sobolev Day, we remember and honor also the great men and women who shaped the human landscape of our great state, who transformed Alaska into the place that we so passionately call our home. Mr. Chairman, thank you for listening to me.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions at this point? Who's next?
I'll go.
We'll take a vote here. Yeah. Please identify yourself.
Hi, I'm Janet Burke, or Janet Sobolev Burke. I was my dad's favorite daughter, because I was the only daughter. So I think this is a wonderful bill, and we would be so honored if the state would recognize his birth date. And my husband and I, towards the end of his life, when he couldn't come up our steps anymore, had to move in with him, and that was fine with him. So we saw him to the end. And there's a lot of funny stories you could tell about Dad. He had a great sense of humor, kind of dry, but a great sense of humor. And he told me one day that he and my mother, Genevieve, were sitting at the breakfast table in Tanaki, and they were to each other for a while. He says, they were just And we sat down at the kitchen table, and he says, Mama put the toast in the toaster, and when it was done, we were still meet to each other. Two pieces of toast popped out of the toaster and landed right in front of us. So all we could do was laugh. He was very humble. He was not bashful to speak at anything, and I think, you know, we all go away with his humility, but yet how great he was. So we knew him as our daddy, and we knew that he knew everybody, and everybody knew him.
Thank you very much. So he had, there were four children?
Yeah, excuse me. Yes, I'm the oldest, and then next to me is my brother Sasha, and then Walter Jr. is here. And, of course, Ross.
Well, you're obviously the most attractive of the children.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next?
And I also wanted to thank you for...
And that's on the record, by the way, when I said that, forever. Okay. Who's going to speak next, if you wish to speak?
Well, It's been said I'm Walter Soboleff, Jr., and I heard a line earlier that I'm going to use. You know, what more can you say about the good doctor? I just want to thank you for recognizing my dad. Gunashish.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Sasha Soboleff, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this particular individual who brought us here to this earth. I want to express my appreciation on behalf of the family to Representative Christ Tompkins for sponsoring the bill and all those who have stepped forward. The questions that you had asked about why should we are great questions. It kind of scrambled my memory brain to see, is it true? Because it does merit some understanding about the depth of this person or any person. It brought to mind one of the things that occurred to me. I used to sneak away when I was an assistant principal here in Juneau to Tanaki for the month of July because that no one knew about it. And Dad and I would have cooking contests together, and he would tell stories, and I'd laugh. And one day, there's a knock on the door. So the son goes and answers the door, and here are three individuals standing there, men. And I invited, they asked, is Walter here? I said, yes, he is. And I entered the room with them, and I said, I'll set about getting coffee together. And Dad looks up and says, why? To what do we owe the Rockefellers a visit to Tanaki? I was like, Rockefellers. John and his family had come to Alaska, to Tanaki, to visit Dad. So while he served on the national level, because he was also on the United States Air Force Academy board that elected, that screened candidates for the Air Force, we have learned in our time that we have to behave ourselves no matter where we go. Because this fella, no matter where you go, would someone come up and say to him, Walter, what are you doing today? We're glad to see you here. It occurred to me that you also need to remember the University of Alaska Fairbanks offered the professorship to Walter to be its first director of the Native Studies program. And he touched all those lives again of the students who came to perform in his classroom from Barrow to Point Hope to King Salmon to Yakutat, to Heidelberg, to Washington. They came to his class so that they could participate. And that says something about the gravity, the insight that this particular individual has. And so it's great honor and respect. I appreciate the opportunity to address this momentous occasion of having something that actually says in our society today that here's a person that's really not only stood for something, but it needs to be repeated. He worshiped his Lord and Savior. He used to say to us, and it bears repetition, when was the last time that you prayed? If you haven't done so, start. If you haven't picked up your Bible to read, I think it would be a great book to open. And last of all, if you've not loved someone like you have loved yourself and your neighbor, that is what this person stood for, and the love of God, and how this earthly life propels us down these paths. So with that, I thank you so much for this opportunity, and I extend our appreciation for the sponsors and this legislature to take this step. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And thanks to all of you. Before we leave, any questions or comments from the committee? If not, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else online who would like to testify? Anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? If not, we're going to close public testimony, bring it to the committee. Any comments from the committee? Anything? If not, Vice Chair Keller?
Thank you. And I want to add just real quick, I am now a co-sponsor on your bill. I would move HB 217, LS0932, uniform out of the committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal amount.
And I, too, will be a co-sponsor. Any, without objection, passes from committee. Thank you very much, everybody who testified today. And the next meeting is Tuesday. We don't have the agenda assembled yet. We're trying to finalize it, so we'll tell everybody what's on the agenda. Anything else to come before the committee? Anything else before the committee? If not, thank you for a good hearing. We are adjourned.